Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi.
This is Joseph Haar in Hsinchu, Taiwan, the city that gave the world the wonderful and unorthodox Su Wei She. And you're about to have your eardrums infiltrated by the Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you very much to Joseph, one of our long-time backers and supporters here on the Tennis Podcast, and now a friend of the show. And very delighted we are to have him as well. So it's a new year. It's 2022. And can't say it's much better than the last one so far, 3 days in. Catherine Whittaker is here. She's got COVID. I'm David Law. I've got long COVID. Matt, how are you?
No COVID or long COVID. Let's put a yet at the end of that sentence. But I'm okay.
We'll
thank
that.
You.
Catherine, tell us about it.
Textbook start to 2022 from me. Yeah, I'm fine, folks. It's like having a cold so far, touch wood. But I am I'm in prison. Billie Jean isn't enjoying that very much. I'm being assisted by very helpful neighbours and so on with walking her. But yeah, it's really, really, I mean, I'm fine, touch wood, but it's really miserable.
Yeah, well, COVID's rubbish. We know that much. Let's hope it's over soon for all of us. Right, let's talk about tennis. That's all I can think of to cheer ourselves up at the moment. And fortunately, we got a tennis podcast to do that on. But if you want to be like Joseph and become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, you can. You can introduce your show. You can have a shout out. We've got another new episode for friends very soon in the plans. We're going to try and record that later this week if we can. My first Australian Open is the idea. We've got several others over the next month or so. And if you haven't already signed up to become a friend, we've got My First Wimbledon and news of Catherine's decimation of her former house and our first experiences of going to Wimbledon.
My parents still live in that house, David. No former about it.
No, fortunately, you fixed it all. Fixed the roof. Brilliant.
A qualified professional did it.
Yeah, yeah. And Catherine no longer lives there, so that's probably for the best, given what she did to it.
I'm hoping to visit at a date in the not too distant future if I'm ever allowed.
Yeah, indeed. So we're 3 days into the new tennis season. Crikey, that kind of crept up on me. I really genuinely got taken by surprise on New Year's Day when I realised that we were halfway through the first day of the ATP Cup, Matt, which wasn't a great start. I didn't think the first few hours of it. It ended up becoming better when Alex de Minaur took to the court, I thought. But it wasn't a very good sort of start. But maybe that's also in keeping with how I'm generally feeling at the moment.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy that sort of dumps on the ATP Cup on the very first, you know, tennis is back show of the year. But maybe that's just how we're feeling at the moment and we're all a bit down about it generally. Look, I struggle to get into the ATP Cup. I have done, I think, every year it's been on. particularly, I think, because each time it's been on, I've been sort of focused on the Davis Cup just before it, and then sort of 30 days later, you get what feels like the same thing, and it just doesn't feel like a particularly brilliant start to the season. That being said, there have been some good matches, which I've enjoyed already. As you said, Alex de Minaur, Matteo Berrettini was excellent. I watched Stefanos Tsitsipas, Diego Schwartzman today. That was fun too. So I do think it will produce some good moments, but that I don't think those moments will sort of make up for the fact that I still don't really know why the ATP Cup exists, what it is, how I'm supposed to feel about it, all that sort of thing.
Mm. It's got, I feel like, some good bits. I was watching it this morning and kind of there were bits that I think we've always liked the teams being in the corner and mic'd up and there for all to see, and that element of it's very well presented. And actually, I think as a TV product, it seems pretty well presented. And then some of the teams are wonderfully decked out in the same kits with the name on the back, like Chile had the name Chile on the back, and they all looked in sync. And then you've got other teams where they're completely different outfits on the same team. And then the first sight of the new season I had was two teams in red shirts playing against one another. And I couldn't actually tell which one was which. Which, I mean, what's that about?
That's tennis's textbook start to 2022. That's the tennis equivalent of getting COVID.
Yes, it's. But I do share your view that there's lots and lots of good little events going on with teams involved, and none of them are particularly satisfactory at the moment. That's the bottom line. I'd take a bit of ATP Cup and a bit of Laver Cup and some of Davis Cup and put them all together, and then you might have something good. And then, you know, and then my daughter, who sat by me yesterday when I turned it on, said, "Oh, is there a women's ATP Cup?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Why not in this day and age?" And I said, "Well, politics." And she said, "No, because it's stupid." And I thought, yeah, that pretty much sums it up. But
the qualification criteria are a massive problem with the ATP Cup if it's laying claim to legitimacy. And this is the argument we have with the Laver Cup a lot, isn't it? That the whole thing, that a lot of the criticisms you can aim at them would be either invalidated or certainly alleviated if they embraced being an exhibition and didn't want to be sort of desperately grasping at legitimacy. But they do want legitimacy. They want to be ranking tour events. And for me, that makes the qualification criteria policy just laughable, really, that teams get in on the basis of their number one singles players ranking. I mean, we have a Georgia team without Nicolas Basilashvili. And I mean, obviously, well, maybe not goes without saying, let's say I'm not sure there is a tennis fan on the planet that has heard of any of those players. I think they're all ranked outside the world's top 500. There are, I'm sure we'll come on to talk about Novak Djokovic. His participation in the Australian Open is still unknown. It was confirmed last week that he pulled out of the ATP Cup. And obviously that fueled speculation about his vaccine status and whether he'd be playing the Australian Open. And yes, maybe it is to do with that. Honestly, we have no idea what's going on with Novak Djokovic at the moment. But there was also a lot of speculation. None of it confirmed. I've no idea if this is the case. But there was a lot of speculation that he never intended to play the ATP Cup. And he entered in order to get Serbia in on the basis of his ranking. I don't know if that's how it was played. Genuinely no idea. But that is a very plausible scenario. And the fact that that's a plausible scenario is a big problem for the tournament. I mean, David has been watching a match played by the world's number two Greek player. And that's time in your life that you'll never get back, David.
Yeah, I was watching the doubles involving Petros Tsitsipas. And I think it is the first
time. Oh, okay. He's not even the number two, is he? there's a number two player that I think isn't a member of the Tsitsipas family. Is that
right,
Matt?
Pervalarakis?
That's the guy.
He is going to have like tales to tell in 20 years of all those years he got to go to Australia and hang out with the best players in the world.
Yeah, I think he's ranked higher than Petros.
Well, Petros is in the 700s, apparently. I did find myself, because I'm not feeling so great these last few days, I've spent a lot of time on the sofa watching tennis, which is, you know, kind of good preparation for this. But it did make me think, because I've never really watched Petros Tsitsipas play a tennis match before, and I just sat there watching him, both trying to work out, well, what sort of tennis player is he? How good is he? And because he's only 21 years of age, but I mean, he's so much physically different to Stefanos, much shorter, short back and sides haircut, kind of burly shoulders, but doesn't look particularly athletic. And yet the first three or four shots he hit a really hard, firm ball, but he looked, frankly, he looked like a really, really good club player is how he looked. He didn't look like a player who's going to be a world-class tennis player at any level, really. And yet I started to look at him and think, there's so many questions I'd love to ask this guy about how he feels hanging around Stefanos, getting all these opportunities to play events and be his teammate and be on the same team and all the rest of it. And I kind of, a bit of me felt a bit sorry for him, sort of wondering if he feels a bit awkward about it. And I'm thinking I could one day interview him. And then I thought, well, I'd find that really awkward as well, asking him questions about what it's like to be Stefanos' brother or being around, you know, what are his ambitions? Does he really think he can make it at the top 100 level? I don't know. So I don't know. Anyway, if anybody's read any interviews, Petros Tsitsipas, save me the trouble, send him over. But it was very ATP Cup in a way. That I'm watching this match, and kind of good and bad. I was interested to watch it, but it's all a bit weird.
It is a bit weird. And moving back on to Stefanos Tsitsipas, his situation is a bit weird at the moment. There've been some conflicting quotes he's given. He actually sat out the first singles match that Greece played, and was seen watching that match with an ice pack on his elbow, which he obviously had surgery on over the off season. That was quite worrying, I think. He then played the doubles, which they won, and he came into the press conference and he was quite upbeat about his elbow. He said that finally it's able to feel normal again, and he's just sort of taking it slowly because he's using muscles he hasn't used in a while, and he's building back up full form, full confidence in it. So that's why he sat out. And then he played today, as we're coming to you, against Diego Schwartzman. And look, he lost in three sets. I thought there were points where he played really, really well, particularly the end of the first set. He won that on a tiebreak. He looked like his old self. He was sort of really athletic on the court, really playing really well, was up a break in the second set. Things were looking good for Tsitsipas in his first match of the year, his first match back from the elbow surgery. And then I think he got tired. I think he faded as that match went on and Schwartzman reeled him in, and he was fantastic, Schwartzman. And then Tsitsipas has given some quotes after this match saying that he doesn't know what his plans are for the Australian Open. He says, I would love to play, but I don't know how I'm going to feel tomorrow. So I don't know. I can't commit to the Australian Open. So there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, around Tsitsipas at the moment. He said he was pleased with how he played. He was going for shots in his match that he wasn't going for a couple of weeks ago. He didn't have the confidence to go for them. So he's moving in the right direction. But it's possible that this Australian Open has come round a bit too quickly for him after that surgery, and he's not going to be as ready as he would like to be.
Speaking of Tsitsipas quotes, David, is it still current information that you have Tsitsipas muted on Twitter?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, well, seeing as we're both a bit down in the dumps, maybe we could do with some wisdom, some helpful nuggets of philosophy. And Stefanos Tsitsipas's Twitter timeline is the place to go for that, folks. It's like free therapy at the moment. Would you like a little sample, David?
Go for it.
Mm.
Just before you start, how many of these are Tsitsipas originals? Do we know?
Oh, I've no idea.
Because he does have a bit of a habit of quoting something and sounding like it's from him, and then
it's like he's got a pile of greetings cards in front of him, or
he doesn't necessarily credit sources.
You know those diaries that have a quote on every page. It's like one of those. Okay, the quieter you become, David, the more you can actually hear.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
We have the art of life is letting go.
Letting go of what?
Anything and everything. He says, we mature. That was a total dad joke, David. We mature with the damage, not the years, he says. He says, work until you no longer have to introduce yourself. Can you still hear me?
Sorry, I just dropped my earphones. What was that last bit?
Work until you no longer have to introduce yourself was his Boxing Day pearl of wisdom.
Okay.
On December 27th, he said, photography is a sport.
Is it?
Well,
it's not, is it?
No, definitely don't take Stefanos Tsitsipas' tweets as certified fact, David. That's not the point of this at all.
I'm trying to work out where he's coming from.
On December 29th, he said, informed is greater than influenced.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then his New Year's Day pearl of wisdom. Would you like that?
Yes, please.
Yep. Cheers to the people who love us, the losers who lost us, and the lucky ones who still get to meet us.
Cheers, Stefanos.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's... he's had an eventful few months, hasn't he? I hope his elbow's well soon. I watched most of his match today. And it was nearly 3 hours. I thought he looked quite good, to be honest. But I don't know whether you can go back-to-back if your elbow's hurting like that in matches like that. And it's been a weird couple of days in terms of results, because and looking at like the Russia team, I mean, that's an incredible group that they're part of. Russia, Italy, Australia. I mean, that's a really strong group. But Russia are decimated, aren't they, Matt? I mean, I noticed Medvedev lost yesterday, and then I looked around for his faithful backup, Rublev and Karatsev from Davis Cup times, and they were nowhere to be seen.
Doesn't reflect well on France that Rublev's not there, Karatsev's not there. Khachanov is opting to play a different tournament to actually get some matches in.
He's a Davis Cup winner now, Matt. He doesn't need to faff around with the ATP Cup.
So he could have got matches in if he'd have just entered.
Indeed, as it happens. But all those players weren't there. Medvedev lost, and they still managed to beat France.
Rublev and Karatsev are both positive COVID-19 cases, weren't they?
Yes, so they had to pull out of the event and isolate. And Roman Safiulin, who I believe is a former junior Grand Slam champion, and I think was the Russian who was really tipped to come through, 7 or 8 years ago, and has never managed to break through. I don't think he's ever been in the top 100. He won. Medvedev then lost to Hugo Humbert. Hugo Humbert, by the way, has a sneaky good record against a lot of players. He's got a winning record against Medvedev, Tsitsipas and Zverev, interestingly.
They all seem to rate him, don't they? Lots of top players have a sort of little hat tip towards Hugo Humbert.
Yes, I remember Nick Kyrgios being very impressed with him as well. And then Medvedev came out having lost that singles, in which he was really below par, has to be said. He didn't play well, Medvedev. Lots of errors, lots of just uncharacteristic
peaking
Medvedev
in a
things. While receiving a massage.
Yeah. There was no time to say, mate, stop massaging me. I just look away now.
He just picked up a bucket and started throwing up in it, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Or a bin.
Yeah, I think it was a bin.
Mm.
It was a bin, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all sort of been there. Not necessarily on a tennis court, live on the telly while receiving a massage, but I think Has everyone puked into a bin at some stage? I feel like everyone's puked in a bin.
It's part of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, then he won a doubles match.
Right. Okay. So can you take out anything as a form guide? If you look back on the couple of editions of the ATP Cup in the past, do you take anything from the form guide that it gives you for what ends up happening at the Australian Open? Should we be reading anything into any of this?
Well, do you remember, was it 2 years ago that Djokovic won the ATP Cup with Serbia?
Yeah.
And didn't you make a bold prediction off that? But you thought the opposite would happen. Is that right? You thought it might have taken too much out of him.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine.
Sorry.
Look how this conversation worked out, David.
but that was when we... That was the first incarnation of the ATP Cup, wasn't it? We didn't know. We were learning as we went about what it is and what implications
right.
it has on everything, where it sits in tennis. I genuinely wasn't trying to throw you under the bus there, David.
It's quite all right.
It's
brilliantly. I mean, this is the home of rubbish predictions.
What I'm saying, David, is I don't think you would ever, any of us would ever say something like that now. That any result at the ATP Cup would lead us to draw dramatic conclusions about the Australian Open in a couple of weeks' time, unless it's sort of injury, you know, unless it's a Tsitsipas thing where we're learning that maybe his elbow isn't quite right yet.
Yeah.
You know, for example, Medvedev losing to Humbert, I don't read much into that.
No, I think that could be a product of Medvedev not having that much of an off season, and that might have a knock on effect at the Australian Open if he's fatigued in any way or not fully prepared. I'm not predicting that. I think Medvedev will have a strong Australian Open, but it might be something that we come back to later, I suppose. I think another couple of players that spring to mind from the past, I remember Berrettini looked brilliant in the ATP Cup last year and looked brilliant at the start of the Australian Open as well before he got that injury. But that sort of set him up for a really good year, I think. And then the other one is Alex de Minaur has played really well in the ATP Cup in the past and then had his Australian Open curtailed. I think one year he ran into Rafael Nadal quite early. One year he actually got injured at the ATP Cup and then couldn't play the Australian Open. And last year, from memory, he was playing really, really well. And then he had to play a match at the Australian Open against Fognini behind closed doors. And it just, it took away all of de Minaur's energy. And it actually really focused Fognini. And Fognini played brilliantly. So there have been little examples in the past where we've perhaps been able to read into ATP Cup form or think ATP Cup form might tell us something about the Australian Open. But I don't know, it's not conclusive, I don't think.
Actually, de Minaur did a bit of a Cam Norrie in his post-match interview yesterday after beating Berrettini, and he was very good, by the way. I found that a really interesting match, and it was another example of what you can gain sometimes from having Jim Courier on commentary. He pointed a couple of things out, and they've sometimes had him sitting courtside as well, and he just notices one or two things that I've not picked up on before about how de Minaur just sort of stands stock still to return serve and doesn't move an inch, doesn't move back and forth, just stands there and challenges an opponent. Doesn't matter how hard they hit the serve, he's standing on the baseline. And afterwards, de Minaur said, "I'm in the best shape of my life and I'm ready to have a big year." And I thought that was boldly said. That was boldly said in the way that Norrie said what he said at the beginning of 2021 about, you know, who do you think's going to have a big year? Well, me. You know,
maybe he heard you all laughing at me on the live show a couple of weeks ago when dredging up our start of the year predictions and the fact that I had Alex de Minaur in my end of year top 10. That was a year ago. Well, yeah. And in response to your laughter, I said, "Well, you'd probably have laughed if I'd said Cam Norrie as well."
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And actually, the other thing that struck me was the difference in de Minaur's demeanour, and I didn't mean to say that as it came out. from the end of last year when he's playing in Madrid or wherever he was playing in the group stages of the Davis Cup. I can't remember where Australia were based, but how lifeless it all seemed in his matches versus what it was like the other night in front of an Australian crowd where he is a hero. They absolutely revere him. Every move he makes, every fist pump, every disappointment the crowd are feeling with him. And it's like he's plugged in to the crowd there. And I do think he could, if he could stay fit. I mean, he had COVID last year and from what I understood, that took a lot out of him and he had some setbacks. But he could have, if he stays fit, a real breakthrough year. I could believe it. I could believe it, Catherine. He could be the Cam Norrie of 2022. I could believe that. So the other one that I did think, and I'm not saying it wasn't just because it was ATP Cup, but I did, watching Zverev yesterday beating Norrie, and it was 7-6, 6-1, and he was serving above 80% first serves in, I did think Zverev looks as kind of composed as I've seen him in terms of just clearly thinking he's it. He is ready. He is going to be the one. That's in his mind. I think he thinks it's inevitable that he's going to make a breakthrough pretty much this year.
Well, he said as much. There was a quote going around in the Tsitsipas press conference that Zverev had apparently said, I must say I missed this, but apparently he said, the big three is now me, Djokovic and Medvedev on a hard court or something like that based on the results of the past 6 months. And Tsitsipas was asked what he made of that quote and he said, let's let the tennis do the talking, which was way better than any of his tweets. As an answer.
It is a bit of a shame that Tsitsipas, I mean, it's a shame anyway that he's got an elbow injury, but I would love to see him without an elbow injury trying to prove that wrong, really.
He's done a new tweet 12 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
News just in. Remember the power of intention, he says.
Is that directed at Zverev? Don't know. In terms of the big three quote. Well, it's going to be very interesting, all of this stuff. I don't find the storylines on the men's side there's not as many of them that I'm interested in anywhere near as there is on the women's side. But there's two or three that are just intriguing in terms of where it's going to end up going. Noticeably, though, after that match, Zverev was interviewed and the guy said to him one of those questions that isn't really a question. He said, oh, you guys have got a pretty formidable doubles lineup, haven't you? Because it was 1-1 at the time. And he goes, yeah. And he just walked off. And then he was selected for doubles. And then he got absolutely taken to the cleaners by Dan Evans and Jamie Murray. And you could see in Evans' body language how pumped up he was to take it to Zverev.
Go on, Dan.
And he did. And I mean, honestly, it was quite interesting. I don't exactly know what was going on with the team selections there. For instance, Evans being put in with Murray and Salisbury not. I don't know whether that was a Salisbury injury. And the excellent doubles team from the end of last year, the Davis Cup team for Germany of Kravets and Tim Puetz, that was broken up. And Zverev was put in, and frankly, they looked nowhere near as strong.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Zverev there. I did read some analysis that GB have ended up with a doubles pairing there in Jamie Murray and Joe Salisbury, which actually doesn't work because they both play on the same side.
Oh, right.
And you would have to you'd have to move one across, and therefore you probably make sense to bring in Dan Evans, who can play on that other side, is a good doubles player, can bring a bit of his presence to the court, I suppose. And yeah, I thought Jamie Murray and Dan Evans combined really well, which, you know, you wouldn't have said 3 years ago, would you, when they were having their little, well, quite big beef, actually, about doubles.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten that. That's right. Yeah, of course. Dan Evans said that doubles players were singles players who didn't make it.
Yeah.
And Murray said he didn't know what he was talking about, and that his career had been a bit of something like a bit of an embarrassment or something like that. because of his lack of dedication. He'd made a hash of it, he said. He's made a hash of his career.
Louis Kaya just received an MBE, didn't he, in the New Year's honours list.
And actually, the nice thing about that Evans-Murray spat is that they are playing doubles together, and they clearly, even though they've given each other an absolutely awful time in the media for about 10 minutes, they've got on famously. Louis Kaye, MBE, that's nice. That's a nice little story.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Is there anything else from the ATP Cup that you've noticed at all, Matt? It'll just potter along to the final stages. We'll bring you up to date with what's gone on in next week's show. But is there anybody else that stood out at all?
No, not really. I think Roberto Bautista Agut got a good win over Casper Ruud. That was in the middle of the night. I didn't see that, but I think he's been playing well. Taylor Fritz beat Felix Auger-Aliassime in a close match. I think Fritz is one to watch this year, probably, generally, given the way he's talked about himself, given the little signs he showed at the end of last season, beating Zverev in Indian Wells. I think, honestly, the other interesting men's stories are going to be in the Melbourne event, which is starting tomorrow, where we've got Andy Murray as a wild card back in Australia for the first time since they retired him. I watched that video again the other day, and I had forgotten that Caroline Wozniacki says to him, "If you want to be my coach, you can." And obviously, she's retired and Murray's playing. It just sort of, the more and more distance we get from that video, the more and more absurd it does seem. And of course, that'll be where Rafa Nadal is making his return as well. So I'm really fascinated by that.
And Kyrgios is in that field as well, I think.
And Kyrgios, yeah. So I think my attention will probably be on that event over the next few days, actually. Quite a good few stories there.
Mm. And so there's two ATP events, aren't there? There's the one in Adelaide, which has got Monfils, Khachanov, Cilic and Tiafoe. But you're right, the big names are all in that one in Melbourne. And as you say, lots of little storylines to look ahead to. The WTA tour is starting in Adelaide. I was watching a bit of this today, and just in terms of the presentation, I mean, the field looks fantastic. They've got Ash Barty as the top seed. She's playing her first match since the US Open. Faces either Coco Gauff or a qualifier in her first match. Blimey. Sabalenka's there. Sakkari's there. Elena Rybakina. I watched Leila Fernandez today beating Ekaterina Alexandrova. But the sort of presentation of it on TV was very different to Sydney in terms of just the feel, where you'd got two commentators, you've got a Jim Courier courtside in Sydney at the ATP Cup, and whereas the WTA coverage was just a single commentator, so very different feel and actually a very different acoustics in the stadium. It sounded very echoey and not particularly intimate, really, certainly in the Leila Fernandez match, but she looked good. I mean, I find her an interesting one, a bit like Sophia Kenin in her second season after winning the Australian Open. It's interesting to see how they cope with it and the different set of expectations. But I don't know, how do you think she'll get on this year? I was impressed with her today. Just straight to business, took on this big hitter, beat her in straight sets.
I think she's going to have a big year. I do. I think perhaps losing that final was at the US Open was, I don't want to say a good thing, because obviously you want to win the US Open. Of course you do. And she's gutted she didn't win it. But there maybe is just a little bit less pressure. There's still, she might feel like she's really got something to prove still. She might still think that she wants, you know, she's desperate to get into that pack of players who've won Grand Slam tournaments. I think she's going to be able to bring that same sort of energy and fight that she had that tournament to sort of every match she plays. And I think that's what makes her really dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. I think that people often talk about, you know, second season syndrome and the transition from going from being the hunter to the hunted. You know, she's got a target on her back now. She becomes somebody that it's a big deal to beat. Well, I think her personality is perfectly suited to being that. I mean, she just loves a scrap. She's always up for a fight. I don't think she minds people coming for her and perceiving her that way. I think, yeah, I think that transition will actually suit her. And yeah, you know, she'll I think always be susceptible to potentially being hit off the court. You know, her physical attributes are what they are, but that's not going to happen very often. And yeah, I think she's going to have a really, really good year. What that exactly looks like, I don't know, but I certainly don't think we're going to have a tricky second album.
I agree with you. It's not the same as winning it in terms of attention, and your responsibilities, I don't think, are as extreme. I mean, I think Raducanu is a particularly extreme case because of how absurd her story was, coming from nowhere and winning the whole thing. But the attention on her and the requirements for her are now pretty unparalleled. But even when I think back to players like Świątek and Kerber and Ostapenko, when they won their first big titles, life changed for them. I don't know how much life has changed for Fernandez. I'm sure it's changed compared to where it was, but if she'd have won the thing, you know, her life is a different life altogether. So perhaps she can just get back to work a bit quicker as a result of not having won it. And as you say, just still have that fervent desire to reach the top immediately. There's no kind of needing to revise goals or anything like that. She just carries on with the same goals to win. And it must be a bit different when you've already got there and been celebrated in quite the way that a Grand Slam champion for the first time is. Cracking match in round one on the plate between Paula Badosa and Victoria Azarenka at that particular event. Is that tonight? I mean, that is going to be amazing.
Yes, so they are playing doubles together as well in that tournament. Oh. And they beat the top seeds, I think, Aoyama and Shibahara in their first match. And now tomorrow, they come out and play singles against each other. Obviously, a repeat of the Indian Wells final from just a few months ago, which I think everyone would agree was one of the matches of the year. So kind of incredible that they've drawn each other in round one. I cannot wait for that. Also saw Sakkari got a win, her first match against Tamara Zidanec. She lost the second set 6-love and generally wasn't particularly happy with the way she played, I think, but just important to get that first win. And Elena Rybakina got a win as well over Storm Sanders, who I was interested to see after her performances at the Billie Jean King Cup. She pushed Rybakina, but I think Rybakina just had a bit too much firepower, really. And the other big result from Adelaide is Priscilla Hahn beating Petra Kvitova. And you can go very early on calls, but I mean, genuinely, they might have played the point of the year already. I don't know whether you saw it.
This is exactly the time of year that you went very big on Victoria Kuzmova. just
no. I'm just going with point of the year.
Okay, point. Okay, right.
Describe Matt.
Well, Kvitova must have thought she'd put the ball away about 8 times, and Hom just kept getting it back, kept anticipating it. Eventually, managed to lob Kvitova. Then they went back into a baseline exchange. It was just fantastic. And Nick Kyrgios actually tweeted that he thinks Priscilla Hahn's really great. I think perhaps just as a reaction of seeing this point, because it was sort of spectacular, take your breath away. Unfortunately, it ended on an unforced error, which does influence, I suppose, how you end up feeling about the rally, unfortunately. But it was mesmerizing anticipation from Priscilla Hahn. And I think I've always sort of seen her name. I've always seen her in the Australian Fed Cup or Billie Jean King Cup team, for example, but never actually really watched her play. And she was impressive. She's got some game. And yeah, I would advise everyone to check out that point. It's doing the rounds.
Will do. Will do. And that's a bit of a tiebreaker, though, isn't it? If you don't end up winning the point on a winner.
That's true.
Might count against her in the end. I think the two nicest sights of the tennis year so far to me were the tweet of Rafael Nadal saying, "Look where I am," and there was a picture of him standing on a tennis court in Australia and with a big smile on his face. And the other one was the sight of Naomi Osaka arriving into Australia herself. And it's been a long time since we've seen her on a course. That would have been the US Open, of course, a few months ago. And she was so upset, of course, after the match she lost against Leila Fernandez. And she said she was going to take a break from the game. And obviously, we don't know how things are going to go for her. But just seeing her back, just seeing her there and looking ready to compete again is a really nice sight. She's got Elise Cornet drawn in the first round of the WTA Melbourne Somerset 1, which is a bit of a departure from what we were doing last year with our Grampians trophies and all that, Catherine. But
I miss the names as well. And we put so much effort into, I'm not going to say learning those names, because not entirely sure we could recite them by heart, but familiarising ourselves with those names and getting our heads around them and feeling just them becoming a part of the sort of Australian tennis season furniture, that to have them wrenched away from us feels a bit brutal, really.
Maybe they listened to this and thought, they're taking the mick. Right, well, we won't use them then.
No, but it was a fond taking the mick. Very fond.
Yeah. If only so we had such Melbourne power.
Nobody's listening to this.
I learned how to pronounce. What was the place that I learned how to pronounce?
Gippsland.
Gippsland. There
After
we go.
A lot of emails.
So many emails, yeah.
Have a think about WTA Melbourne Somerset 1 and what you might be able to do with that, Catherine, because we're going to need something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got a lot of time to devote to that task, so I've got to come up with something good.
How many days you got left?
Well, if I can return 2 negative lateral flows 24 hours apart, then I can be free on Thursday. But my lateral flow tests have been negative all the way through, so they're not worth the money they're written on. I don't know. Anyway, the COVID maze.
Indeed. Simona Halep is also back, thankfully. Second seed in that WTA Melbourne Somerset 1 tournament. faces the qualifier in round one.
And I'm quite interested in Simona Halep this season. She's really, I think, fallen out of the conversation, to be honest. We don't talk about Simona Halep. She's also fallen out of the top 10, I think, for the first time in 7 or 8 years. I was reading an interview with her on the WTA website today where she's talking about her goal is to get back in the top 10. And I really think it could, obvious, but it could go one or two ways for Halep. She seems very happy, very content. And I've always got the words of Mary Carrillo ringing in my ear. Is she too happy? Is she too content? Has she almost got too much perspective on life now? Or will that free her up? And will we see a sort of resurgence from her again? I wouldn't be surprised by either, but I hope it's the latter, because I love watching Simona Halep play. And I think I think she's a great player in her own right, but she also makes a great opponent and she makes great matches. And the deeper she goes in tournaments, the better, really, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm intrigued to watch Halep again. And the key is staying healthy. She's not been able to do it for a while now, but hopefully she can.
Mm. Indeed. Yeah, we'll keep a close eye. The WTA Melbourne Somerset 2, which also starts on the same day, is also a 250 event. And just has a completely different field. Has Jessica Pegula as the top seed. Elisa Mertens, second seed. Have they done this by ranking? Have they stuck all the highest ranked players in the one draw and all the others in the rest?
Yeah, it's a bit odd, isn't it? I don't quite know how this has happened. I guess you just enter one or enter the other and this is the way it's fallen. I don't know.
Hmm. Okay. Kostyuk. Sara Sharibas Tormo, Amanda Anisimova, Clara Towson, Daria Kasatkina, all in that draw. The one player you'll have noticed I haven't mentioned on the WTA side is Emma Raducanu, who has pulled out of Melbourne, it says. I think that's one of the two Somerset events this week. So maybe he's going to be back next week.
She was going to be in the one with Osaka.
Right. Well, I mean, she's had COVID. She had that isolation period in Abu Dhabi, wasn't it? And says she needs more preparation before she can get playing competitive tennis. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's one thing getting this virus and hopefully being asymptomatic or at least having mild symptoms. But then you've got to make up physically from what you've lost, both as somebody who's not been very well and has been in a hotel room all that time, and also has just not been able to train and compete and play practice sets, and you are behind, aren't you? I mean, that's a...
Unless they've got a Peloton, David, I would say.
Oh, is that the key?
I did a very lacklustre 20-minute Taylor Swift core class yesterday.
All right.
Yep.
So I don't have a Peloton.
Tennis players, take note.
Okay. And so, yeah, Emma Raducanu, I don't know whether she's going to try and play next week, but it's a big ask, isn't it, to expect her to sort of make any inroads, I think, at this Australian Open with the depth of the competition and when you're behind, when you haven't had any match play. I don't think it would be surprising if she lost first round, really, in the Australian Open.
She is intending to play a warm-up tournament the week before, isn't she? I think she said.
I think so, yeah.
So, it'll depend on the draw she gets there, whether she's able to get a few matches under her belt there as a launch pad going into the Australian Open. She was always going to be an unknown ahead of this Grand Slam, I think, but it just throws an extra element of reason to be cautious, I think, Emma Raducanu.
And plenty of intrigue all the way through the year, really, I think, for her as well, because she just doesn't know. She's never done this before, which is extraordinary to think. Novak Djokovic has been seen hitting in Spain, but we haven't seen him in Australia yet. Is that correct?
He's been in Menorca, is that right?
I think I read Marbella.
Marbella, that's the one. I knew it wasn't Mallorca, but I also knew it was an M. Marbella.
So she went with Mallorca anyway.
No, I went with Menorca.
Oh, Menorca. Menorca. Oh, first place I ever went on a plane to, would you believe?
Really?
Many years ago.
He's been spotted on hitting with Australian Open balls on a blue court in Marbella. Yeah.
Well, that's either an interesting sign of his potential participation or just a sort of troll.
I don't know about you, but I'm so bored of this Djokovic mystery. I know it's his own medical situation and he has absolutely no obligation to disclose it to us or anybody else. But I'm so tired of this mystery.
It'd be just nice to know if he intends to try to play or not. Simple as. That's all I want to know.
I mean, I think the answer is it's not in his hands and he doesn't know yet whose hands it's in and when he'll know and what the answer will be. We don't know, but I'm exhausted by it and it's so... I just... Yeah.
It's be over
so
soon.
Pointless.
Yeah. Be over soon. Dominic Thiem's not playing. He's out of the whole Australia swing. Will start his season on clay in Latin America at the end of January, early February. I think that's sensible, to be honest. I think the chances of him being properly competitive, really, at the moment, much as we'd love to see him back, are would be very small after a wrist surgery. So I think he's probably making the right call there. So yeah, loads and loads of tennis going on this week. We'll keep you up to date with it on our show next week. We will also have a newsletter out in the next couple of days, in which we've stuck our big predictions for 2022 in. So sign up to our newsletter if you're not already on the list. The link to that is in the show notes to this show. And yeah, we've had a few belters coming on Twitter of people who've given their big predictions for the year. Penelope Mills says Ash Barty's going to win the Calendar Slam. Chances? She's the only player who could do it, surely. What do you think?
Yeah, she's not going to do it, but if I had to name a female player that could do it, I'd say Ash Barty, but I don't think that's going to happen at all.
Too much competition, isn't there, out there?
I think we might have invented a new segment, Catherine taking down listeners' predictions. I'm quite excited about the next three.
Okay,
you could
Bobby
say
Walnut.
Anything on Twitter. I could say, you know, Arthur Rinderknecht is going to win the French Open. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you wouldn't get read out.
Wouldn't I? I feel like you would. No, no. You are going to read out the most outrageous. So
no, I'm not. No,
okay. Let's just see.
Ash Barty to win the Calendar Slam's good, right? Bobby
Walnut.
It's
not going to happen,
though.
That is pretty outrageous. Not going to happen. Sorry, well, Penelope, okay. But it's not going to happen.
Clip that up, Matt. Bobby Walnut says none of the big three will add to their haul of 20 Grand Slam titles.
Yeah, it's plausible. I'm not sure that's that big a prediction, Bobby.
She's hard work today, folks. She's not going to be just nodding her head along with all these, I tell you. Sam says Djokovic will get to 21 at the Australian Open and the momentous achievement triggers another one of his weird long dips in form, and a rejuvenated Rafa then wins his 21st at the French before adding an incredible and unexpected Wimbledon title to take him to 22.
Until I heard the Wimbledon thing, I was going to say that's not a big prediction at all. If anything, I'd say that's, you know, not unlikely. But the Wimbledon addendum makes it a medium-large prediction. Could happen.
Thoughts on what you've heard so far, Matt?
I told you, we've invented a great section. I'm enjoying Catherine's analysis immensely.
Okay, I can't wait to see what she's got to say about what Stephen Molloy has put down here. Denis Shapovalov will give me multiple headaches.
Not a big prediction, definitely going to happen.
Carlos Alcaraz will lose in the first round at the French, leading to a hilarious first daily from the pod.
Yes, please.
Because I've said Carlos Alcaraz will win the French Open this year. I mean, this is ridiculous. Stephen Molloy says, Catherine will defend her title in the predictions race.
Yep.
And David will go unbeaten against Solihull Simon, which is probably a decent shout, given that I'm not sure I'll get out there and play him, the state I'm in at the moment. But anyway.
Solihull Simon is focusing on doubles.
Yes, he is actually. He's done his knee in, so he's focusing on things that don't require movement.
He's Andy Murray in 2019.
Yes.
Yes, he is. That's right. So he's given Feliciano Lopez equivalent a call. Yes, they're sweeping all before them. So we've almost got through it, folks. Two people with illness, and we've almost got through the show. We do have the most joyous part of the podcast to enjoy at the end, certainly from our perspective, because we have all new mascots. First, like to say a huge thanks to our 2021 mascots, which were Rogue for me, Zeus for Catherine, and Scousel Mousel for Matt, who were all most marvellous presenter mascots. And we've got new ones, Catherine, this year.
Yes, they were big shoes to fill for me because obviously Zeus mascotted me to victory. And
yeah, so Carter, you've got your...
He will always have a special place in my heart. But Carter has got off to a wonderful start by announcing his place as my mascot for the year via video. He chose me personally.
Over me.
Mm-hmm. And he did so using a tennis ball as a prop. And he's just lovely. He's a six-year-old flat-coated retriever owned by Ray. He's got beautiful, soulful eyes. According to this picture, he looks like he very much enjoys a beer and a cupcake. And yes, he chose me, and I'm delighted.
And no offence, Carter, but I'm also delighted because it means I get Darwin, the dog, as my mascot, who is a 10-year-old Wheaton Terrier owned by Carrie. And I've got a picture here of Darwin lying on a green US Open sort of 90s style tennis court, green with the white lines, looking lovely. And
Darwin
I'm very
is lovely.
Happy
very,
to have you,
very
Darwin.
Good name for a dog, Darwin, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm perfectly happy with Darwin as my mascot. Matt has got Gerald the cat, who's owned by Daryl. And Daryl is the person who we all beat at the predictions throughout the year last year, or at least some of us did.
Yes, I didn't.
I think that's why you've been mascotted.
Yes.
Daryl wants to coach you.
Yes, I need some help. So I have Gerald the cat on my side. Our Wimbledon mascot, I think from 2020. Our Wimbledon relived mascot, Gerald.
Oh, super.
Marvellous cat.
Oh. He's a classy guy.
Mm.
That's great. We also got a weekly mascot who is Colin, 16 months old, Fox Red Labrador living with Blair and Chris. And we've got a picture of Colin sitting in the countryside, in the hills, with a lovely lake in the background. And he's got a massive smile on his face and he looks lovely. So thank you so much for being our sponsor this week.
Yes. I like it when dogs, animals have sort of very pedestrian human names, e.g. Colin. You know, can you imagine a dog called Clive?
I've never met a dog called Colin
or
before. This
a
is
cat
a first.
Called Siobhan.
I can't imagine it. I can imagine any name
or Sally.
You like. So
Sally.
We've got 50 mascots throughout the year to look forward to meeting, and I can't wait to see them all. And talking of dogs, Billie Jean's got a sponsor again this year. It's Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, who are back. So thank you to them for sponsoring Billie Jean. We've also got the return of our executive producer, Chris Albert Lee. The top bloke, Catherine, is back.
Do we have to find a new compliment for him for 2020?
Nah.
He's just top bloke. He can't improve upon top bloke.
It's like when someone gets introduced as sort of former world number one. There's no point in giving them anything else. That's good enough, isn't
okay.
it?
Okay, yeah.
We've got shout-outs as well, haven't we, Matt?
We have got shout-outs, and excitingly this year, shout-outs have a bit of extra information accompanying them.
Oh, yeah.
This means that when I ask you for supplementary information, you don't have to squirm.
I have it at my fingertips. Yes.
Depends what you ask.
It does depend what you ask. If you ask where they're from, that is the answer I will have.
Okay.
So, first one of the new year is Greg Fishman.
Where's Greg from?
He is right, from Greg. Richmond, Virginia, USA.
Oh, very wow. nice. Richmond is the capital of Virginia, I believe.
I think it's where Arthur Ashe was born.
Lovely. I've never been. I want to go.
Yeah.
yeah. Go for it.
I've been to Richmond, London, but, you know.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Yes.
Tell us all about Richmond, Virginia.
And we asked if they had anything else they wanted to say with their shout out, and Greg said simply, love the show. So thank you very much,
Greg. Oh, thanks, Greg.
Cheers, Greg.
We have Carrie Zotter from Salzburg, Austria.
Oh.
Wow.
Cool.
That's very cool. Isn't there a tennis tournament in Salzburg? No, there's something in Salzburg, isn't there?
Is there a Grand Prix?
Is that where the Austrian Grand Prix is, maybe?
I don't know. That's I'm out of my depth with F1.
Is Salzburg a skiing, already getting asked skiing question. Place? Anyway. Oh, no, maybe I'm just thinking of FC Salzburg. Maybe I'm just thinking of football. Oh, dear.
Red Bull? Are they a Red Bull team?
Red Bull Salzburg.
Yes.
There we go. Yeah. Okay.
Mm. They've got a free ad.
We got there. Well, we got somewhere anyway. Thank you, Carrie.
Finally, we have Bethan Griffith from London.
All right, Bethan.
An oldie but a goodie, Bethan.
Down the road from Catherine.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
She is half Welsh and was introduced to the podcast after a friend from her uni tennis team recommended it to her, which is very nice.
It's a very highly Welsh name, that, isn't it? Bethan Griffith.
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bethan.
Do exactly like Bethan has. Tell your friends about the tennis podcast. Get them to listen because we're going to be coming your way big time over the next few weeks, hopefully. We can all stay out of trouble because it's not been the best few days. But we are planning daily editions of the tennis podcast throughout the Australian Open. That's the idea. So you'll have lots to get your teeth into, and we'll try and keep you fully up to date. Also, as I mentioned at the start of the show, if you'd like to become a friend of the tennis podcast, not only are you helping to keep the show going all year round, it helps us to produce well over 100 shows a year. I think we managed over 150 in 2021. But those will all be free to everybody. But for friends of the tennis podcast, you'll be getting extra stuff. And that already includes the show we recorded in December, My First Wimbledon. We got lots and lots of archive shows, some of our favourite shows that we picked out and put in on that feed as well for all friends. And we're going to record another one in the next few days, My First Australian Open, so I get to reminisce some more. We've got, talking of reminiscing, a couple of editions of Tennis Relived planned. We're going to have listener Q&As throughout the year as well. Lots and lots of other ideas for the rest of the year. So if you would like to become a friend of the tennis podcast, the link is in your show notes. So do please sign up. Catherine, get well soon. I know it's been a rubbish few days. But we'll be back and up and at them very soon, won't we?
Hope so.
That's the idea. Matt, stay away from it if you can. It's rubbish. I hope you all stay safe and well as well. And we'll be back next week. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.